Good evening. It is great to be here with y'all tonight. As you know, we've been going through a series about people who may have had humble beginnings or may not have been touched on in a ton of parts of Scripture, but they had a huge impact on the people around them and even in the story of the Bible. Tonight, the topic is Abigail, someone who I'd read about and I was like, that's a cool story, but I hadn't really gone much farther into that. And what I found by reading it and studying it is that it is so applicable to all of us. Do you ever feel like we're living in a situation where kind of the person in power, whether it be a boss, executive in the government, something like that, doesn't really seem fit for the job they have? Well, tonight we're going to look at Abigail, and she overcame her circumstances, and she made a difference, and in fact, she saves a lot of lives. So we're going to go to 1 Samuel 25. That's where the story of Abigail and David happens. I'll give you a second to turn over there. A little context. In chapter 24, this is where David is still running from Saul, and in fact, David spared Saul's life for the first time. And then right after this, in chapter 26, David spares Saul's life again. So this seemingly inconsequential story to the scheme of things is told. And that seems like it's going to be important. So his men and David were trying to get away from Saul. And this is the context that we have. So we see that Samuel died in the first verse, and so we're going to skip to verse 2. There was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. And so immediately we see that David is far away from Jerusalem. Maon and Carmel is like the southeastern portion of Israel. Actually, they were kind of surrounded by people of other nations on all sides. So clearly, David and his men had been traveling a long way. They were probably tired. They probably hadn't had a great meal in a while. And so they were on the move. And they come close to this wealthy man. And his name was Nabal. And the name of his wife was Abigail. She was a woman of good understanding and a beautiful appearance. But the man was harsh and evil, his doings. And he was of the house of Caleb. And let me stop here. We know Caleb as one of the two spies that was good, and he gave a good report of the land that they were supposed to go into for Israel. But what many scholars believe this to mean was that Caleb literally means doggish. So the Bible describes this man who was very wealthy, who was in power, as kind of doggish. He was bad behaved. And if that reminds you of anyone you know who has power, this applies to you. Maybe this is about someone who is above you in some way or another, in authority or in influence or in power. And so David and his men came in, and Nabal was shearing his sheep in Carmel in verse 4. And apparently he made a lot of money at this because he was very rich. And so David sent his men to ask Nabal if they could come and feast with him, because it was a feast day, and we'll read that. In verse 4 it says, "When David heard in the wilderness that that Nabal was shearing his sheep, David sent 10 young men. And David said to the young men, 'Go up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus you shall say to him who lives in prosperity, peace be to you. Peace be to your house, and peace to all that you have. Now I've heard that you have shearers. Your shepherds were with us, and we did not hurt them. Nor was there anything missing from them all the while when they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they'll tell you. Please give whatever comes to your hand by your servants and to your son, David.' So when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all these in the words, 'In the name of David,' and then they waited." So David brings this positive message. He's trying to make a friend, and his men are obviously tired and hungry from running all this distance. And so they wanted a meal. They just wanted a good meal. In this humble request by David, who earlier on had been literally appointed the king of Israel by Samuel, he came in with this humble request. Your son David is asking for this. And here is Nabal's response. He said in verse 10, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away each one from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men when I do not know where they are from?" And so there's a portion, this I just read out of the New King James, and there's a part in that ESV that says, "For who knows, many servants are running away from their masters these days, or separating themselves from their masters these days." This statement was intended to insult David. Nabal had no respect for a good man. And at first it may seem like, okay, this just makes sense. But when you dig deep, it doesn't, actually. So first he offended David by saying, "You're running away from your master," which is Saul. Clearly he knew who David was. This was an insult to David, and this was saying, "Go back to Saul and go submit to him. You're not anything." Because word travels. The second part is he was very stingy with his money, but we know that he was very wealthy. He said, "Shall I take what basically I've set aside for my servants and give it to you?" So he was very wealthy, but was unwilling to give. And we can skip ahead to verse 21 and kind of see the depth of this. Verse 21 says, "Now David had said, 'Surely in vain I have protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that was belonging to him, and he has repaid me evil for good.'" So David literally did this guy a service. It wasn't like he was just asking for something out of nowhere. David had been protecting Nabal's men, and they had been a wall to them day and night, is what the servants say. Okay, so this is kind of like the background of the applicable parts. David reacts harshly and wants to kill them all. In fact, he says, not even a male is going to be left out of the house. And this is understandable a little bit, although not so violent that we feel in these days. But we see the inconsistency, and we can relate to the ups and downs of David's life because, you know, in chapter 24, he had spared this guy's life that had been trying to kill him. And then right here, he's so angry that he's going to kill all the males in this guy's family. And then the next chapter, he is ready to spare the man who's trying to kill him again. So we kind of see that this is pretty relatable to us. So here is how this kind of comes to Abigail. Let's go to verse 14. "Now one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, 'Look, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled them," or he railed at them. "But the men were very good to us, and we were not hurt, nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them. When we were in the fields, and they were a wall to us both by night and by day, and the time we were with them in keeping with the sheep. Now therefore, know and consider what you will do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his household, for he is such a scoundrel that one cannot speak to him." So they knew that this guy was stubborn. They knew that their master was stubborn. These servants openly spoke against their master. Clearly, Nabal was not a great guy. And he didn't exactly treat his servants well. I kind of guess if they were living in modern-day America, Abigail wouldn't get to really watch her favorite TV show much. It would be what Nabal wanted. Stuff like that. Abigail was in a pretty tough situation, it seems. So the first thing that we see with this is that the servant comes at Abigail. The servants have a respect for the wife that usually wasn't there in ancient cultures. So we see that Abigail has done a good job of setting herself apart among the servants as a respectable woman. And so they go to her. And she immediately does the following. In verse 18, "Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, five sheep already dressed, five seas of roasted grain, and 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs, and loaded them on donkeys. And then she says, go to him quickly, and I'm going to come behind you. The immediate application is, when we see there's something wrong, when we see that something bad is about to happen, when someone above us in authority messes up, and there's going to be consequences soon, we have to act. We have to do the inconvenient thing. I'm sure for Abigail, taking all of this food and all of these animals and putting them on donkeys could not have been convenient. And so we see her going the extra mile to prevent calamity, because David intended to kill all of them. The second thing is, she gets help. She knows she can't do it alone, so she tells the servants, go on ahead of me and kind of smooth things over before I get there. She made haste, it says in verse 18. So in verse 23, she comes to David. She says, when Abigail saw David, she dismounted quickly from the donkey. She fell on her face before David and bowed down to the ground. So she fell at his feet and said, on me, my Lord, be all the blame. Please let your maidservant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Please let not my Lord regard this scoundrel Nabal, for as his name, so is he. Nabal means foolish or folly. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words. I, your maidservant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, this is verse 26, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed and avenging your own self with your own hand, now then, let your enemies and those who seek harm from my Lord be as Nabal. And so that very King James, kind of hard to understand passage, sort of if you were just kind of trying to follow along with your ears, really breaks down into something that's incredible. Guys, if we want to do something special, and this is definitely applying to me, if we want to do something special, if we want to change lives, if we want to do what God would have us to do, we have to be willing to fall on our faces in front of people. We have to be willing to bow down. We have to be willing to say, this is my fault. I want to fix it. We have to be willing to put away our pride and put away our perceived worth and say, I want to help. I want to do something. We have to act. In verse 26, we see that she mentions the Lord. Clearly, she has a faith. And in fact, she says, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hand, now then. And then she continues. She knows what this is going to do to David. She knows that David avenging himself is not what the Lord wanted. She was a woman of faith. So she had to have a background. She had to have a faith to be willing to stand up and then to humble herself. When we're faced with hard times, when we're faced with struggles maybe brought on by people who have more influence than us, we have to have that foundation there first. And we have to have faith in God that He's going to carry us through and He's going to help us do what we have to do. So then David, you know, recognizes this. She gives David the present in verse 27. And then in verse 28, she says, forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house, because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days. She knows what's happening. She knows that David is out here, and David is someone who has followed the Lord. She clearly had a knowledge. She clearly did her homework. And she was willing to fall down at his feet and say, please don't do this. Here's everything I've done. Please forgive my mistake. Please forgive me, even though she hadn't done anything wrong up to this point. And then in verse 29, she says, yet a man has risen to receive you and seek your life, but the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God. In the lives of your enemies, he shall sling out as from the pocket of a sling. So she knew that Saul was chasing him too. It kind of builds up this fact that Nabal knew who David was and was just really just trying to hurt David's feelings and saying, no, sorry. And Abigail realized this. Imagine being stuck, basically, married to a man who had very little faith, who was very bad behaved. His only gift really was his riches. And yet somehow she found a way to not only strengthen herself in God, not only to have a reliance on God, but then to, out of her terrible situation, out of her unhappy, probably, marriage, to go and bow herself to another man and say, this is my fault. I don't know about y'all, but I don't think I have that kind of humility. I don't think I can pull that off. This is something we all can work on, is action and humility. Let's keep going. So in verse 32, David reacts. This is kind of where the payoff happens. David said to Abigail, blessed is the Lord God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. And blessed is your advice, and blessed are you, because you have kept me this day from coming to bloodshed and from avenging myself with my own hand. So the man who's known as the man after God's own heart then praises Abigail, saying, you were right, I'm sorry. And your advice is basically saving me from a lot of guilt and a lot of wrongdoing that he would have done. So by humbling herself, by pouring out herself, she not only has saved lives, but she saved David from going down a path that he should not have gone. This one woman with an unhappy marriage, a role that didn't really happened over about 3 days of time in all of history, influenced the man that people would refer to Jesus as the Son of David. She changed one of the most influential figures of history through her very hard situation. Whatever stuff we're going through, whether we're in unhappy relationships, whether we have people that have influence over us doing bad things, whether it be your frustrations towards a leader, you can do something. Those of us in social clubs, you know, if you don't agree with someone who has leadership over you, those of us with jobs, I don't know why I said us, I don't have a job right now. Those of you with jobs, your bosses who, you know, may kind of lord their power over you, who may yell and scream at people, you can do something. And you can do something powerful. Because you don't know the effect that you could have on the countless amount of people in future generations by your impact on one person. All it takes is one person. So David recognized Abigail's goodness. Then we see in verses 36 through 38 that Abigail told Nabal what happened. She hadn't before because she knew he would be too stubborn to say yes. She could have just kept her mouth shut. And this is more of a testament towards the goodness that Abigail had and the loyalty she still had to this terrible husband. She told him about it all in verses 36 through 38. She told him what had happened, what she had done, and what David had intended to do to his whole family. And it says Nabal just kind of changed. He kind of died emotionally right there. And then it said, after a while, the Lord struck him and he died. And so,
By stopping David's vengeance for himself, she allowed the Lord to take vengeance. And so there's another application. Guys, if we're kind of having an issue against someone else, it is not our job to take vengeance. In fact, we know that one day the Lord will take care of that for us. Now, I don't think he's going to, you know, just strike someone down. That would be kind of crazy. But in the last days, we know that God's going to have justice. So be like Abigail. Have patience with God. Know that in your humility, maybe in your bad circumstances, maybe in your rough life, know that you can do something incredible, even if it is just influencing one person. I want to go to a couple other verses that really kind of bring this home. I want to go to the end of this chapter first. We see in verse 39 through 42, especially in verse 41, here's what it says. Then she arose, bowed her face to the earth, and said, "Here is your servant, a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord." After she got everything, basically, she married the future king of Israel. After, you know, she had been blessed and glorified for being humble and for doing the right thing, she stayed humble. If we want to do something incredible by doing something like Abigail did, we have to know at the very end, we're still worth the same. It's a lot in Jesus' eyes, but we cannot let our heads get big. We have to be willing to stoop down and wash others' feet. Even if we, you know, become the wisest who ever, or we're recognized for doing some amazing thing. The verse that John Allen read, James 4:6, says, "God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble." And here's another direction that this can go. When we see Abigail and when we see what she did, we would not have known her had she not acted. If she was just wise, if she was just good to her husband, we wouldn't know her. It would be in David's slot. I don't know what that word is. He slayed. That's it. He slayed the house of Nabal, and that would be the end of it. The difference is, Abigail did something. Just because we're Christians, and just because we're good people, doesn't really mean a whole lot if we're not doing something. I want us to go to Matthew 3. Matthew 3, and we're going to read verses 9 and 10. And this is when John the Baptist is talking to people in the wilderness, and he is preparing the way of the Lord. And in verse 11, he kind of talks about preparing the way of the Lord. In verse 9, he says, "And do not presume to say to yourselves, 'We have Abraham as our father.' For I tell you, God is able from these stones to raise up children for Abraham. Even now the axe is laid to the root of the trees. Every tree, therefore, that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire." And that's one of the scariest verses to me. Because I like to think of myself as a good person. And I like to, go to church and to smile when people pass me. And certainly not to be mean to others, intentionally at least. But if we're not doing our job as Christians, that is creating other Christians, that is actually doing something with our situation and with the gifts that God has given us. It says here that the axe is laid to the root of the trees. And God can make Christians out of anybody. That word doesn't make us special. Everyone is special. Everyone has the same value. So I want to challenge you tonight to do something. Whatever gift you have. With Abigail, it was literally just wisdom. If you have a head that's screwed on straight on your head, you can do something.
That's a country term. I'm sorry if you didn't understand that. So we as Christians have a job to do. In James 4:17, it says, "So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, to him it's sin." When we see something, when we see an opportunity, we got to take it. And we got to take it in humility. And that's something we, at least at Fried Hardeman, we were talking about it the other day. We have such a big problem because so many people seem so religious and in tune with God, but there is so many opportunities to go and evangelize the people on that campus and then around in Henderson. This church would grow if we all took action, if we all humbled ourselves, were willing to wash the feet of other people in order to grow the church. We all have a job to do. And lastly, I want us to turn to Hebrews 13, 12 through 16, and this is where we'll close. Hebrews 13, 12 through 16. In verse 12, he says, "So Jesus also suffered outside the gate in order to sanctify or make holy the people through his own blood. Therefore, let us go to him outside the camp and bear the reproach that he endured. For we have no lasting city here, but we seek the city that's to come. Through him, then, let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of lips that acknowledges his name. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God." So let's be humble. Let's sacrifice. Let's bow our heads. And let's get to work. If you've heard this and your heart was stricken by something at all, if you feel like you haven't done your job as a Christian, if you're struggling with any temptation, if you're struggling with something that has made you lose faith in God, or if you're not a Christian and you wish to be baptized, please come now as we stand and sing.